Morning to all of you and greetings in Jesus' name. And the unburdening was already happening because I allow the clock to affect me more than I should. This morning, I had hoped to be more practical at the end of the message than what it's going to be. But I know the Spirit of God is not limited by our ability or inability, and so it can become real and practical in your own hearts today. And what we want to talk about this morning, and I know I'm repeating myself, but most of us, when we preach, we are preaching what's going on inside, not because we're preaching at people that have needs, even though you all have needs just like I do. And so what we're going to look at this morning is something that I deal with daily, many times daily. And we'll get to that in a little bit. This morning again, since I hope you all don't have a very good memory, we again have a question for our title of the message today. And that is, shall we go to Egypt? And I found it interesting to look into circumstances and that surrounded why people in the Bible went to Egypt, why they traveled or why they moved there. And I discovered one of the things among many I discovered is that Egypt was a very desirable place to be. And we'll look at some of that briefly. I'm not going to drag you through a lot of scripture, even though there is a lot of references to Egypt. So there was fertile soil along the Nile, and the delta, I think probably somebody here in geography class, maybe in fourth or fifth grade. Fifth grade, Madeline, do you study about the deltas? You know what a delta is? It's where the river, when it gets to the bigger body of water, begins to break out and spread out. And the delta of the Nile is quite large. I don't know what it was in the Bible, because I'm sure that the silt that's carried down during the flooding time has made that delta grow. But it is now somewhere upwards towards 10,000 square miles. And what that simply means is that there is 10,000 square miles, about a third of the a quarter of the size of the state of Pennsylvania, that is very fertile, growing area. And it was that way in the Bible times because the Nile would flood about this time of the year, every year. And I know I talked about that in the last year and a half or so, but some places it got as deep as 6 feet. But then when the waters receded, there was another layer of very good silt, I think is the right word, that they were able to grow much crops. Good crops. They even had irrigation canals that were constructed in order to use the floodwaters of the Nile more effectively. Egypt was wealth and prosperity. There were cattle, there were horses. Egypt was known as a land of many good things. And I think maybe perhaps it was like modern-day America, I don't know. Because even though some days we don't know if we like being in America, there are thousands, probably millions of people around the world that just wish they could be in America. They want, I mean, that's on their bucket list, or even maybe more than that. They come in tribes to the border or in whole groups. People wish for the opportunity to be in Egypt. So I'm going to look briefly. I'm going to rush down through a list or a group. Yeah, a number of things about people. Look at people who went to or fled from Egypt. And I know, and maybe it's because it's the Bible, but God was directly involved in many of the moves toward or away from Egypt. And I'd like you to see that as we go down through. So in Genesis 12, Abraham went to Egypt because there was a famine. And you may remember that because of his beautiful wife, he told people that she was his sister. And he gained favor with Pharaoh, and you know Sarah was in Pharaoh's house. And everything was good with Pharaoh until he discovered that Abram had lied to him and that she was his wife. And then immediately Pharaoh sent Abram out of Egypt and said, leave. Send him out of the country in verse 20 of chapter 12. This was a temporary stay. And as it appears, this was what intended for most of the stays in Egypt, if not all. I can't say all of them, But just notice that little thread that the stay in Egypt was to be temporary many times. I also found it interesting that later on, Hagar, the Bible notes that Hagar, however you call her, Abram's handmaid, was from Egypt. She was an Egyptian. And Ishmael, her son, later married an Egyptian. So in Genesis 26, there was another famine, and this was in the time of Isaac. And Isaac thought to go to Egypt, but God says, do not go to Egypt. Go elsewhere. Don't go to Egypt. And in Genesis 42, there was another famine. And that's the one we know a lot more about, because at that point, Joseph was now in Egypt. And this is a famine for Jacob and his family. So there was life in Egypt because there was corn in storehouses. There was plenty there. And we know what had happened with Joseph. And he told his family to come and live out the drought. He told them when they finally got across them to move that it was going to be another 5 years. And that's when they decided to move. They talked about it in chapter 45. And then it seems to me like Jacob only thought that it was going to be a visit to Egypt. But God came to him in a vision in chapter 46 and said, no, you go to Egypt. You move to Egypt. So the question I have, but we don't have an answer. Did God actually only intend for the family of Jacob to be there temporarily rather than for 400 and some years? I don't know. Did he only intend for them to go till the famine was over? It's not stated, but when we look at other visits to Egypt, they were temporary. So God heard the cry of the Israelites hundreds of years later because of the oppression in Egypt. In Exodus chapter 2, after Moses had fled away from Egypt, and that was not his choice, but rather Pharaoh was after to get him because he had killed an Egyptian, and he fled into the land of Midian. And in Exodus 2, because of the oppression, in Exodus 3, he saw the bush that wouldn't burn up, and he turned aside to check it out, and the Lord talked to him and said, you got to go to Pharaoh. And you need to bring my people. God said, bring my people out of Egypt. And Moses went on to try God a few times. We know the story. He made a bunch of excuses. And he ended up going back to his father-in-law. And he got the blessing from his father-in-law. And God again in chapter 4 told him to go. And he was going back with a specific purpose that God had instructed him to go back. In Exodus 13, a group of people fled from Egypt, and that was the Exodus, as we know it. They left Egypt. Jeremiah 42, 43, and 44, this is leaving that Exodus now. God spoke through Jeremiah. This was after there was captives taken to Babylon, and there was a group that wanted to go back. They wanted to go to Egypt because they felt that there was their help. Let's get to Egypt. And It's long, and we're not going to read it, but in chapter 42, verse 11, God said, you dare not go back to Egypt. If you go back to Egypt, things are going to happen. He told this group, you're going to die. You're either going to die by the sword, or by pestilence, or by famine if you go back to Egypt. And again, in chapter 43, he says, go not to Egypt. And in 43, verse 7, it says, the Bible records that they obeyed not the voice of the Lord and said, we're going back to Egypt anyhow. And 44:11, God said he was going to set his face against them. And now, I would have thought by this point, they would have reconsidered. But it didn't even cause them to reconsider. This was part of the group of people that were pulled out of Jerusalem into Babylon. And they decided they are not going to reconsider. And so they needed to feel God's wrath. And to go there to Egypt and feel God's wrath. They were in Babylon because they didn't do what God asked them to do. And they lived selfishly. And in 44, 12 to 15, God details a bit what was going to happen. And in verse 16, they told Jeremiah they were not going to listen to the message that God had just given them. And so they went. And we don't have a lot of details of what happened, but a small remnant got pulled back out of Egypt later. And God spared. But many of them, I'm sure, died because God's word is true and his promises are sure. Fast forwarding, in Matthew chapter 2, there was another instance where someone was told to go to Egypt, and it was Joseph and Mary and their little baby. I guess he was little. He was at least under 2 years old. I'm assuming, because they were told to flee from Herod and go to Egypt for safety. God told Joseph in a vision of the night, sometime in the night, that they are to leave. And then when it's time to come home, God came to him in a night vision in Egypt and said, now go back. It's all safe. The man that looked to take your son's life or Jesus' life is no longer living. That was very fast, and there was a few more, but that was just a quick rundown. So what did Egypt mean in the Bible? We look at Egypt today, or as we consider when we read the Bible and we talk about Egypt, we all remember or think about one thing, that it is a type of the world. And so where is that found? We know the children of Israel were delivered from it, and God reminded them many times, numerous times, of that fact. And the Bible in 10 times calls Egypt the house of bondage. 10 times. And so I believe it is right for us to assume that Egypt was to be considered that, and that it is a sign of, as we look at those things, it is for us today. Now, if you will turn with me to Isaiah 30, I don't know how many verses I'm going to read because I don't want to keep us too long. But I do want to turn into the Bible. So I think I have this written somewhere later in my notes, but this is the words of Isaiah giving God's message, but it was about over the time that the Assyrians were coming up against King Hezekiah, and Sennacherib was wanting to wipe them out or take over them. And I don't know if they actually went after Egypt or not, but there was talk about going and getting help from Egypt. And so I'm going to read some of these verses, and I want us to think about it as Americans in 2024 today. Egypt, a type of the world. I guess I'll read verses 1 to 5 of chapter 30. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin, that walk to go down into Egypt, and have not asked at my mouth, to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and the trust in the shadow of Egypt your confusion. For his princes were at Zoan, and his ambassadors came to Hanes. They were all ashamed of a people that could not profit them, nor be in help nor profit, but a shame and also a reproach. Now, right over into verses 1 to 6 of chapter 31. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help, and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. Yet he also is wise and will bring evil and will not call back his words, and will rise against the house of the evildoers and against the help of them that work iniquity. Now the Egyptians are men and not God, and their horses flesh and not spirit. When the Lord shall stretch out his hand, both he that helpeth shall fall, and he that is hoping shall fall down, and they all shall fail together. For thus hath the Lord spoken unto me, like as the lion and the young lion roaring on his prey, when a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, and he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall the Lord of hosts come down to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. As birds flying, so will the Lord of hosts defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. Turn ye unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. And we could keep going on. But he's saying God is speaking so loudly, just like a lion, verse 4, that's roaring after his prey, and this multitude of shepherds wants to hold this lion back, is not going to be held back. But the Lord's going to fight for Mount Zion. But he's pronouncing a woe to those that are turning their backs or revolting, turning their backs on God to go down. He's telling Hezekiah, don't even think of it. Don't do it. Now we're going to leave off there. What am I doing about Egypt? Are you keeping yourself free of Egypt? Am I living in Egypt? Is there any way I can keep Egypt from affecting my life? How long, remember I said it's 10 times house of bondage, how long can I be in Egypt until I'm ensnared by it? How can I be free? Here's what God told his people in Numbers 15, 41. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. And I was caught by the little phrase, I brought you out to be your God. Can God be your God if you're in Egypt? God cannot be their God the way he wanted to be while they were in Egypt. They were in bondage. He could not lead them in a profitable way. But neither can God be our God if we are ensnared, if we are enslaved in Egypt. There wasn't a way to mix God in Egypt for Hezekiah. There isn't a way for us today. 2 Kings 18:21, listen to this. Now behold, and this is again around the time of Hezekiah and Sennacherib with Assyria coming up against. Now behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, on which if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, unto all that trust on him. I'm going to read it again. I hope you can grasp it. Now behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed. Get the picture. Even upon Egypt, trusting in this Egypt, on which if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, is to all that trust in him. So this is around the time of Sennacherib besieging Jerusalem. I already said that. The prophet wanted to cut off the desire for them to go and seek help in Egypt and from other nations around them. Unbeknownst to them, God had this marvelous plan, and we know the end of the story, but they didn't. God had the plan that he was going to wipe out 185,000 of them just like that. And one night, they wake up, they were dead. That was God's plan, but they didn't know this. And they wanted to go lean on Egypt, and God said, it's a broken reed. It's a staff that you don't know is broken until you lean on it, and then it breaks, and it pokes into your hand. Now, how painful is that? We know what that, we can imagine what that feels like. And because Egypt was a house of bondage, that staff had a barb on it. Get hooked with a hook with a barb on it, you can't hardly get it out. And that's the word picture I get when I saw this verse. Egypt meant bondage, and pharaohs were not interested in helping people. That's what God says here in verse 2 Kings 18:21. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, unto all that trust on him. They trust in him, but he doesn't care about them. He just wants their money. Well, that's what we say today. The pharaohs were known to be cruel. Egypt is cruel today yet. So we live with Egypt all around us. And according to one writer I read, he said, he or she, I don't know who it was, there are three ways to deal with Egypt. That is one, separate from the world. It's easier to live God's standard if we're isolated. But God has called us to be a light to Egypt. We cannot be Hutterites. I was in a meeting some weeks ago and there was some Hutterite representatives there. And in a Google search later, I did not realize that in the United States and Canada, there's over 550 Hutterite colonies. I know that's off topic here. But they are intending to live isolated, and I must remind you that they're not living all righteously. They are living a religion, but they're not all righteous. But the way is not to live separate from the world in the fact that we are completely isolated. While that's easier for us to live uprightly as a group if we were isolated, God's call is for us to be a light and a witness to Egypt. Secondly, what's the other way to deal with Egypt? It's to live by a God's standard while we're living amongst the world. And this is a difficult road, but Peter taught us that he has given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. So it is possible to live with Egypt around us and live with godliness. And the third way to deal with Egypt is to compromise in one or more areas. And I would suggest, and I'm suggesting, that the majority of Christians today are attempting to live this way. Compromise in one or two areas. That way we can get along with Egypt better. No, we don't throw everything to the wind. Many are trying to straddle the fence or straddle the ditch. Have one foot in one camp and one foot in the other. And the closer we associate with Egypt, the less wrong it seems. The separated life feels less important when we try and compromise, when we choose to compromise attempt to compromise with Egypt. Egypt is loaded with empty promises, and this equals false securities. And those leave the seeker confused, distraught, and taken advantage of. On the other hand, sometimes the world does have answers and solutions that actually work. But just like the children of Israel, they begged and begged. It left, God gave them their request, but he sent leanness under their souls. And you can find answers and solutions in Egypt, in the world today, but we're left spiritually lean and gaunt and unhealthy. It will not work long term. Egypt is religious. The world around us is religious in some ways. And it appears Christian friendly. There are Christians in Egypt, and make sure you know that I mean that in quotes. So I want to warn us against false teachers, and I know I've done this before, but we cannot stay alert too much for the falsehood that is around us in the world that looks to be truth. Truth is taken and distorted. Yes, there's just still a little bit of a picture of truth, but it's twisted. You know, you can't quite see it, but yes, there's truth there, but it's twisted. And it appears truth, but it's actually a mirage that brings you into the cesspool of deception. And it works because that's why Egypt is doing it. And they are pulling one after the other into deception. Be aware of Egypt's religions. So what securities are you seeking after in this world? What are we tempted to look at Egypt for? We read here in Isaiah, woes that are pronounced that go down to Egypt for help, because their horses are strong and their chariots are many. And it's a good thing, or so it's supposed to look good. Another Trump reign is not the answer. I believe that men of this world will always let us down in some way or another, in some fashion. Am I looking to Egypt to teach me how to be secure financially? Are you attempting to build a storehouse that's going to keep you comfortable? So Joseph built that storehouse, the storehouses at the command of God. And it wasn't about comfort. It was about making it through the famine. But Egypt tells you today to build a storehouse to keep yourself comfortable. Will you be satisfied with a little to carry you through a famine? Lay not up for yourselves treasures. Now, I was only going to quit. I can try and quit the whole thing. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But rather, lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. We only need what we need in this life to carry us through the famine, but we need to lay up. There is no storehouse in this world as secure as the heavenly storehouse, because Jesus has said that's the way it is. If your treasure is there, there's your heart, and that's where it's going to get your securities, as the world calls it, that you need to have to feel secure. Maybe a little different angle of security. But we all carry Egypt. Well, I shouldn't say all. Many of us carry a little bit of Egypt in our pocket. Or maybe we carry a lot of the world in our pocket. I just had to think about the security that is to us. How secure do you feel when the battery goes dead in your phone? Or how secure do you feel when you lost it? I know some of us are worse than the others of you. But that is a worldly security. Just think about what security you place on that piece of technology. The world's methods of staying healthy is constantly changing as well. There's always new ways to improve health, and they're coming by the day. Do we hope in a healthier future by following the latest fad diet or by taking the next supplement? What about God's method of moderation and temperance when it comes to our diet and our health? Temperance and moderation in all things. Perhaps the double shot or the little bottle of 5-hour energy boost is not needed if we're willing to follow God's plan of moderation and temperance. Temperance in work schedule, temperance in sleep schedule, in habits. Egypt will take you on a long, changing journey in alternative health options if you follow its promises. And unfortunately, there's a religion there. And there's all different quiet ways that it's trying to make its way into your life. Please beware. Are you as free as you can be from getting security to protect God's things? Meaning, are you free from insurances? Egypt and the world are here to take advantage of us in more ways than one. And one of the ways they do it is by creating this little fear thing in your heart about what you have and you need to protect it. And they want your money more than anything else. They don't care about you. They really don't. There really isn't any security in an elevated insurance premium after you had a claim. Part of my thoughts go back to our deacons meeting Wednesday afternoon, which Dwayne wasn't present there. That's not part of the report, but we had a 2-hour deacons meeting. And one of the things we talked about was this whole thing of using Egypt when it comes to insurance. And one of the men told us that he had a claim and the insurance company that he had to be part of for his business took care of it. But what they do, they turn around and jack the premium up. They don't care about you. Most times you will pay far and above what you ever see in return. And at times they say it's necessary that you have double protection. Get an insurance policy to back up. Get an insurance policy to back up the insurance policy. And that is real out there, and there's people doing it. And this is just for peace of mind in case something happens. And that's why they put that there. Plant fear in our hearts is the goal. But is your future in God's hands? Are your things, which are actually His, are they in God's hands? Do you believe that He can take care of it? Do we really need, I know there's some obligations in insurance for businesses, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about vehicle insurance, health insurance, fire and storm on your home, over and above what the church can provide. Do we really need a layer of protection that is created to be an umbrella over the hands of God? Are your God's hands not big enough? Or do you need to go to the world, to go to Egypt for an umbrella to cover God's hands because His hands aren't big enough? I know it sounds ridiculous, but think about it. Next time you see the billboard and say, I just want to be covered. Think about it, young people, when the question comes up of whether or not to pay Social Security or become exempt. It's a plan of the world. What about our homes? Last Sunday, Jason preached about children being a heritage. Egypt has begun to affect our families. Our family sizes have been affected. You heard the statistics? Relating to child training is threatened. The Bible way has been and is being replaced, and I hope it's not in your hearts, but it has been replaced with timeouts and tolerance and medication, and spend 5 minutes researching that, and you'll come away fearful of those things and what it actually is doing in society. Some people in our circles are using society's terms and calling our gifts from God kids. I think it's a terrible thing. Are you doing what you can to protect your home from the effects of Egypt and this world? I want to qualify what I've said so far, and that is at times Jesus said we're in the world, and He prayed for us with the Father that He would keep us from the evil that's in the world. And there's times we do need to go to Egypt because we live in Egypt. But our connections need to be guarded. And we must remember the truth, the fact of James 4:4, and said that whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Let's guard our friendships, our connections with the world. So as I already said, we are living with Egypt all around us. We don't just go to Egypt like Jacob or Abraham did. We are living with Egypt all around us. Please do not alter your life to appear friendly toward the world. Don't alter your life because you don't want to look old-fashioned or strange. We need to look old-fashioned or strange. Compromise does not have a lasting promise. Following Jesus is the only true promises out there. Just like it was to the Israelites. We could have read some of those verses when they were in the wilderness and they said, oh, if only we could be back where the leeks and the garlics and the sat by flesh pots and all those good things, the lovely things that we could eat. I think their houses were even adequate. Maybe they were even attractive. But what did they forget? They had forgotten about the slavery and bondage. And that's what we forget. That's what we don't think about when we look at the good things of Egypt. The Bible says that there is bondage in Egypt. There is slavery in Egypt. By faith. What's the answer? By faith, he forsook Egypt. Moses forsook Egypt. We must daily forsake Egypt. That was the only way, and that is still the only way. We need to forsake Egypt in our hearts. Let's kneel for prayer.